Okay, so Genesis chapter 37. So again, at the start of this chapter, it says that Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. And then in verse 2, it says, these are the generations of Jacob. And again, we talked about this before. Whenever the book of Genesis uses that phrase, these are the generations of, it's refocusing the story from one central figure to someone else. Okay? In this passage, it's kind of passing the baton from Jacob to his generations, which are his children, and he's going to focus on one in particular. So it says, these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. So we read about how Joseph was the favorite son of his father Jacob, or Israel. And it says in verse 3, now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a coat of many colors. How many sons did he make a coat of many colors for? Just one. He had one clear favorite, and all his other sons knew that. They knew that he was the favorite. They knew that he got the special treatment, and they were envious of him. And to make matters worse, Joseph had this knack for having these dreams that always seemed to elevate him above the rest of his family. And Joseph would always take these dreams and tell them to his family. And that made his brothers even more envious. We looked at these dreams last time. There's two of them that are mentioned. I just want to point out one thing that I didn't really get to last time, which again was a few weeks ago. The first dream that he told them is in verse 7. It says, for behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. So what do you notice about this dream? Well, Joseph is talking to his brethren, and he said, we all had a sheaf, and all your sheaves bowed down to my sheaf. So who's in the dream? Well, his brothers. Pretty much only his brothers. That's all you see here. The other thing you see about this dream is it's very earthly. It's focused on something earthly. It's focused on farming. They're binding sheaves in the field, and these sheaves did something very unsheaf-like. The second dream, in comparison, and his brethren, they said to him in verse 8, shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they knew. It was very obvious, the interpretation of this. And then verse 9, it says, and he dreamed yet another dream, and told it his brethren, and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. Interesting. So now we've shifted from something earthly to something heavenly. Now we're talking about heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and the stars. Also, it says the 11 stars. Well, there's 12 suns, and Joseph is one of them, so he's kind of exempted here, but it's pretty obvious. Okay, the 11, that would be my 11 brethren, right? And then it leads you to, okay, well, who are the sun and the moon? And his father just kind of assumes, well, that's me and your mother. And of course, we observe that his mother was already dead by this point. One thing that this kind of reminds me of, because I didn't see anything else that talks about 11 stars, but there's one verse in the Bible that mentions 12 stars, and that's Revelation chapter 12. And verse 1, and to be honest, I'm not really sure what the link is here, but I know that there's something here, so I'm just going to point it out to you. You can think about it. But Revelation chapter 12, verse 1, it says, "And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars." There's something going on between those two verses. Again, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but these two dreams that Joseph had, there's more to them than is being interpreted to us in that chapter. Later on in the book of Genesis, Pharaoh's going to have two dreams that are going to be very similar, and Joseph says, well, the dream is one. The thing is doubled, because God's going to bring it shortly to pass. It's established by God. He's going to bring it shortly to pass. I think that's kind of happening in here with these two dreams. There's some overlap. It's kind of similar theme here, but I also think they're a little bit different and there's more going on. Anyway, I don't want to go off too much on that. But what we can see here is that Joseph was the clear favorite of his father. And it also says when he was with his brethren, he brought unto his father their evil report. We've already read some of these sons of Jacob. They were kind of, they weren't the most spiritual bunch. They did some bad stuff. And when they did, Joseph was the one that ratted them out. And he told their father what they were doing. So today we're looking, starting at verse 12. And it says, "And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem. Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, Here am I." So Joseph is the messenger here. He's the one that his father is sending to his brethren, and he wants to see how they're doing. And of course, if they're doing something bad, he wants to know about it. It's interesting, later on in this book, Jacob is going to refer to Joseph as he that was separate from his brethren. And we're going to see in this chapter how he really is physically separated from them. He's being sold into Egypt. But I think there could be more to that term than that. I think about how in Hebrews chapter 7, verse 26, it talks about Jesus, our high priest. And what does it say about him? That he was separate from sinners. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17, where God says, "Come out from among them and be ye separate." And I wonder if he's telling us something about Joseph. He was separate from his brethren. Well, they had an evil report. They kind of had this pattern of doing bad things. We're going to see some more of that in the next chapter. But Joseph really only tells us good things about him. And in that way, he was really separate from his brethren, even before he was separated from them by going down into Egypt. Okay, but anyway, so verse 14, Jacob said to him, "Go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren, well with the flocks, and bring me word again." So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Now, so Hebron is down here. Shechem is about 50 miles north of Hebron, okay? So this is not like right around the block. This is probably a few days' journey to get there. It's going to take him a while. So he goes up there. Says he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Verse 15, "And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, What seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, They are departed hence, for I heard them say, Let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. Okay, there's some conjecture about who a certain man is. I'm not going to get into that because I don't really see anything in the scripture to say, yeah, we know who the certain man is. It just says a certain man. But this I can say, that God had a plan that, and it was he was the one who gave Joseph those dreams and set this whole thing in motion. This was all according to God's plan. So I have no doubt when Joseph went here up to Shechem and he doesn't find his brethren and he's just kind of wandering around, doesn't know what to do, that it was according to God's plan that this certain man found him and directed him to go the right way to find his brethren. We say, well, that was kind of unfortunate because of what happened to Joseph up here. Well, sometimes unfortunate things happen to us because it's God's will, because he has a bigger plan than what we can see. Sometimes we break an arm or a leg or something and we think, oh man, that's just terrible. But maybe God has a bigger purpose to it. Yeah. Anyway, so a certain man finds him, sends him to Dothan. So it says in verse 17, Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. Now, what is Dothan? First of all, the name Dothan, it means two wells. Okay, two wells. That's probably the pit that they threw Joseph into later. It might have been one of those two wells. But anyway, Dothan means two wells, and there's something kind of significant about this place. So I have Dothan up here on the map. This is just kind of a guess as to where it is. But one thing, I did a little bit of research into Dothan. One thing that I thought was really interesting about it, and it really ties into the story, is the location of Dothan. It was very close to a major trade route that ran from Egypt to Syria. Now, you think about where the land of Israel is. It's smack dab right in the middle between three major continents. You have Europe up here. You have Asia over here. You have Africa down here. And Israel is the intersection between these three major continents. And this was one of the most important ancient trade routes from this time, you can see. It's called the Way of the Sea. The popular name is Via Maris, which is Latin, which means Way of the Sea. Okay? Via, Way, Maris, you think like maritime, it's got to do with the sea. Okay, so this is a very important trade route, and they would carry goods from Egypt up to Syria, Syria down to Egypt, and they would cross through this area. And Dothan was very close to this trade route. This phrase, Way of the Sea, does anybody remember where that is in the Bible? Because it's mentioned a couple of times. Once in the Old Testament and then quoted in the New Testament. It's in Isaiah chapter 9. Very famous passage of scripture. Isaiah chapter 9. I used to read this phrase and I just, those are just words. What does that actually mean, you know? Well, this is what it means. This was something that was well known to these people and to everybody in that area. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 1, it says, "Nevertheless, the dimness shall not be such as was in her vexation, when at the first he lightly afflicted the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward did more grievously afflict her by the way of the sea, beyond Jordan, in Galilee of the nations." So he mentions the way of the sea. That is this trade route, Via Maris. And it mentions Galilee. Well, Galilee's up here. It's right on that trade route. And Dothan is very close to that. So, what were his brothers doing in Dothan? I can't really say, but they were supposed to be in Shechem tending their father's flocks. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's where he sent them, apparently. So what are they doing there? Joseph asks this certain man, tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So I don't know what they were doing there. But to me, it just kind of looks like they were sent to do their father's business. And they kind of went astray from that, thinking, oh, let's go up to kind of where this trade route is and this worldly traffic going on. And they kind of left behind their father's business. That's kind of in line with the report that we read about his brethren all this time, is that they're not really doing well. But anyway, so he goes up there, and verse 18, it says, and when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him, and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. We talked about some symbolism already in this chapter. One thing that this passage right here really makes me think of is if you go to Luke chapter 20. It's not an exact parallel, but you can definitely see a theme here. Luke chapter 20, started at verse 9. Then began he, that's Jesus, to speak to the people this parable. A certain man planted a vineyard and let it forth to husbandmen and went into a far country for a long time. And at the season, he sent a servant to the husbandmen that they should give him of the fruit of the vineyard. But the husbandmen beat him and sent him away empty. And again, he sent another servant, and they beat him also, and entreated him shamefully, and sent him away empty. And again, he sent a third, and they wounded him also, and cast him out. Then said the Lord of the vineyard, what shall I do? I will send my beloved son. It may be that they will reverence him when they see him. Now just imagine Jacob down in Hebron. And he sends his beloved son, his favorite son, to check on his brethren and see how they're doing and see if it be well with the flocks. And so he sends him. Now, what was Jacob thinking? Oh, no, I'm worried about what they're going to do to my son Joseph. No! What they did to him was unthinkable. What they wanted to do to him was unthinkable. He wasn't thinking, oh, I'm sending him into danger here. He's saying, surely they'll reverence my son. He's their brother. They're not going to do anything bad to him. That probably never even entered his mind. It may be they will reverence him when they see him. But when the husbandmen saw him, they reasoned among themselves, saying, this is the heir. This is the favorite son. All our father's favor goes to him. Maybe if we kill him, maybe some of that favor will go to us instead, huh? This is the heir. Come, let us kill him that the inheritance may be ours. So they cast him out of the vineyard and killed him. I see some similarity there. Now, back in Genesis 37... that was their initial plan. Let's slay him and cast him into some pit, and we're going to lie about it and say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. They're thinking his dreams are just something that he made up because he's the favorite and he just wants everybody to know it, that he's just better than everybody else. So that's what they're thinking. Well, we're going to change that. We're going to kill him, and these dreams are not going to come to pass. Okay. Verse 21. So it says, "And Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, 'Let us not kill him.' And Reuben said unto them, 'Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again.'" So Reuben wants to deliver Joseph out of their hands and not have him killed. Was that a good desire? I would say so. Yeah, he wants to save his brother's life. And probably also, as the eldest, he feels some responsibility here. Hey, I gotta look out for my little brother. That's the thing about Reuben, though, is that a couple chapters ago, we just read something really bad about him. Something terrible that he did. That he lay with his father's wife. Not his mother, but one of his father's other wives. So this is what we read about Reuben, is that he's sometimes bad, sometimes good. What does that make him? Unstable as water. That's what his father's going to say about him later on in Genesis 49, when he's trying to bless his sons, and he gives them each a word about who they are and what they're going to turn out to be. Genesis 49, verses 3 and 4, he says, "Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defiledst thou it. He went up to my couch." And then he goes on to talk about how bad Simeon and Levi have been. So this is what I see about Reuben. Sometimes he does the right thing, or wants to do the right thing, but sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he does something bad. He doesn't, and his method here, he wants to save his brother, but he's not very direct about it. He doesn't really stand up and say, "Hey, he's our brother, we gotta save his life." Well, he kind of says that, but he's like, let's stick him in this pit, and then I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll just come back later, and I'll get him. And Reuben has some fear of his brethren, okay? They all want to kill him. He doesn't want to kill him. He's kind of outnumbered. Okay, I gotta try and turn him a little bit, but at the same time, I can't really go against them because I'm outnumbered here. And we're going to see how that plays out. But that's his plan, to deliver him to his father again. So verse 23, "It came to pass when Joseph was come unto his brethren that they stripped Joseph out of his coat, his coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it." This kind of imagery that it brings out, verse 24, like I said, this is probably a well. That the name Dothan means two wells. This might be one of them. But it says there was no water in it. A pit with no water in it. That brings a couple of verses to mind. One, I think of the story that Jesus told about the rich man and Lazarus. That Lazarus lift up his eyes in hell, or not Lazarus, the rich man. The rich man lift up his eyes in hell. And what does he say? "Send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in some water and bring it to me so I can cool my tongue." Why? Because there's no water in that pit. The other verse is in Zechariah chapter 9. Let's turn there. Zechariah chapter 9. Start in verse 9. It's a very, very well-known, famous verse. Zechariah 9:9. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation, lowly, and riding upon an ass, and upon a colt, the foal of an ass. There's one thing I just love about that verse. He is just and having salvation. A lot of people, they like to think about the salvation, but they don't like to think about the righteousness of Christ, how just he is. That's why he has salvation, because he's just. Verse 10, and I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall speak peace unto the heathen. And his dominion shall be from sea even to sea, and from the river even to the ends of the earth. Verse 11, as for thee also, by the blood of thy covenant, I have sent forth thy prisoners out of the pit wherein is no water. Wow. How about that? We're talking about the king coming with salvation. And by the blood of thy covenant have I sent forth thy prisoners out of the pit wherein is no water. That make you think of anything? Makes me think of people that are delivered from hell by the blood of Jesus Christ.
Amen.
The pit wherein is no water. That's where Joseph is a prisoner right now. And again, Reuben's desire was actually to stick him in there for a little while, but then deliver him back to his father. But when the time came, he couldn't do that. Interesting. All right, verse 25. It says, and they sat down to eat bread. Yeah, they're just acting all casual, like, eh, no big deal. You know, we hate our brother. We wanted to kill him. We threw him in a pit. Let's just sit down and have lunch. They sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And again, you can see in here what they're doing. They're coming from Gilead, which, by the way, is near Syria. It's probably over here somewhere. Okay? Because remember, Jacob called the name of the place where he met with Laban, Galeed, or as it says, Mount Gilead. Okay? So after he left Syria, Padan Aram, which is in Syria, he comes to this place, Gilead, which I didn't mark on this map. But that's where these guys are coming from, these Ishmaelites. They're coming from Gilead. They're coming along this trade route through Dothan, and they're bringing all these goods down to Egypt. So, verse 26, and Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? What profit is it? Hey, we got an opportunity here, boys. We can make some money off of this. We can make some profit. See, if we just kill him, what's that going to do for us? We got an opportunity here. Let's make some profit. Verse 27, come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh. And his brethren were content. So let's just sell him into slavery. I mean, after all, he's our brother. Just sounds like a good reason to sell him into slavery, right? Verse 28, then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. So wait a minute. Here we got kind of a discrepancy because it says they were Ishmaelites, but it also says they were Midianites. Well, who's Ishmael? Ishmael is the son of Abraham by Hagar the Egyptian. Remember? He was the first son that Abraham had. Now, who's Midian? Midian is the son of Abraham that came later on by Keturah, the woman that he married after Sarah died. Okay? So you have Midianites from Midian. You have Ishmaelites from Ishmael. How are they the same group of people? Well, here's what I'm thinking. Believe it or not, from my my constitution, I used to be a table tennis player. And I used to go into Canada sometimes, and I would play these tournaments. And the vast majority of people that I played there were Chinese people that lived in Canada. So I'd come back to the States, and I'd tell my friends about who beat me there. And I might say to one friend, oh, it was a Canadian guy. His name was Chen. But then I might say to the next friend, yeah, I got beat by some Chinese guy. Well, who was he? Was he Chinese or was he Canadian? Well, by ethnicity, maybe even by culture, he's Chinese. But by nationality, he was Canadian. So here's kind of my theory, is that these people, by ethnicity, their actual lineage was probably from Ishmael. But they had mingled in and settled in Midian, so they were both Ishmaelites and Midianites. So that's kind of what I'm thinking there. But otherwise, if you're looking ethnically, Midianites and Ishmaelites are two separate groups of people. They're two different tribes. But anyway, I just thought I'd put that in there in case you noticed the discrepancy. It's very... It's not necessarily a discrepancy. That's what I'm saying. Verse 29. So Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. And he returned unto his brethren and said, the child is not, and I, whither shall I go? I'm his older brother. I'm supposed to be responsible for him. What am I going to tell his father when I go back? How can I go back home and face him? So Reuben is visibly distressed over being unable to redeem Joseph the way that he wanted to. I think there is some additional symbolism here with that. I don't know that I'm really going to have time to get into it, though. So maybe we'll talk about it next week, or you could just ask me afterward, and I'll tell you my thoughts. Verse 31. So you could see Reuben's intention here was to do the right thing, but then what does he end up doing? Verse 31. They took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, this have we found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no. And he knew it and said, it is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces. And Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, for I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. What did Reuben do? Nothing. He agreed with his brethren to bear false witness. He's like, I can't save Joseph. he's gone now. I might as well just go along with the lie and not cause a stir with my other brethren. I could tell my father that Joseph actually is alive. We just kind of sold him into slavery, but he wasn't going to do that. It looks like Reuben wasn't even there when he sold him, because he goes back later, looks at the pit. Oh no, he's not here. Well, he would have known that if he was part of the ones that sold him. But anyway, he agreed with them. He agreed with their story. All his sons and his daughters rose up to comfort him, and Reuben didn't say anything. Unstable as water. You could see Jacob's grief over Joseph. You can be sure, Jacob loved all his children, but Joseph was his favorite. He was his most beloved. And it says he mourned for his son many days. And the rest of his family, they tried to comfort him, and he refused to be comforted. He spent the rest of his life in grief over his son. Well, until a certain point, we'll get to that later on. So verse 36, finally, and the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. So we see Joseph finally end up in Egypt, and things are looking pretty grim. Now, I've heard it said before that Egypt is a picture of the world. I've heard other people say that Egypt is a picture of the flesh. What I see here in this context is that Egypt is a picture of death. Egypt is a picture of death. Joseph was as good as dead here. His brethren wanted to kill him, and then at the last second they sold him, and he just goes into Egypt instead. But we're all just going to say he's dead. We're all just going to say some evil beast got him, and he's dead. And as far as all his brethren thought, he's just gone. He's so far out of the picture, he might as well be dead. And later on, when they go to Egypt, and they talk to Joseph, not even knowing that he's Joseph. They say, oh yeah, yeah, our father had 12 sons. One of them is not. What does that mean? He doesn't exist anymore. He's gone. He's dead. That's what they're saying. Egypt here being a picture of death. Guess how the book of Genesis ends? Coffin in Egypt. Are the last three words of this book. Coffin in Egypt. But again, here is what God is doing. We're in Genesis chapter 37. Let's just peek ahead to Genesis 39. And we'll see how this story continues. It says, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hand of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither, and the Lord was with Joseph. Amen. The Lord was with Joseph. Joseph was down in Egypt. He was in the valley of the shadow of death, but guess what? The Lord was with him.
Good.
And out of that, we'll just end with this. Go to John chapter 12. Again, I'm just bringing this back to the plan that God has. Sometimes it's not looking good at the moment, but God can see a little bit farther than we can. And he's got a bigger plan than we realize. John chapter 12, verse 23. And Jesus answered them, saying, the hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Glorified? What do you mean, Jesus? You're heading to a cross. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. That's why God had Joseph go down into Egypt, so that he could die there and then be glorified and bring forth much fruit. So we'll continue on next time, and just thank you for being in Sunday school.